There's a lot I have to say regarding giftedness and the things in my life that are directly or indirectly related to which, in my view, is everything.
Hello, and welcome to the International Gifted Consortium. I'm Vanessa Wood. We hear real-life stories daily from our communities, from our schools, and from our families across the globe, both heartwarming and heart-wrenching. In order to truly understand our highly and profoundly gifted population, we have to go beyond our own experiences to the depths of another's reality. In each episode, we'll give you a glimpse into the life. So sit back, embrace the space, and take in the view. From the eyes of the highly profoundly gifted, this is Room with a View. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. We embarked on this podcast adventure as a way to continue the IGC mission and education outreach during this time of unprecedented health risk, social distancing, and loss. Thankfully, we have continued education outreach and expanded our reach by a lot. You, our listeners and valued stakeholders, parents, educators, practitioners, gifted adults, mentors, and philanthropists come from across the globe from over 30 countries. A reminder that with adversity comes the opportunity for creative thinking, development, and potentially some silver linings. We vital stakeholders have to be keen to opportunities and also be open to failure, knowing a new horizon always exists. I want to take this moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for being part of this new horizon. We hope you will continue to contribute to the IGC efforts by sharing this podcast with your friends and family and colleagues. We need your arms and your voice to continue to expand understanding, identification, and support for giftedness inclusive of the highly profoundly gifted population. Giftedness spans the lifespan of individuals and families. So today, I am super excited to introduce you to Sari and her family. Sari and I connected from the moment we met many years ago when our children attended the same school. Her oldest, Luke, is now 19 and a junior in college studying musical theater. Her daughter, Noelle, is 17 and a junior in college majoring in painting and drawing with a minor in art history. And Jason, who is 10 now, is homeschooling and attending an online university. It's both an honor and a joy to be speaking with all of you today. Thank you so much for giving us a glimpse into your life. Jason, I would love to know what school's been like for you. Can you tell me about a favorite class or teacher? What makes this class or teacher your favorite?
My favorite teacher was probably my fourth grade teacher. She allowed me to go on in math, which is my best subject. Another reason why I liked her is because if I ever finished my work early, she would allow me to go on to other stuff that she had planned for the day so that I could finish all my stuff early. Another thing that she did was she had these little challenge papers that you would write on. They're like little quizzes on stuff that maybe not all fourth graders know.
The challenge questions sound fun, Jason. When you move on in math, what does that look like? Do you attend a higher level class with a math teacher, or do you work independently on your own? How would you choose to learn math?
My fourth grade teacher always let me do my stuff by myself, so basically independent work. But she also gave me other more complicated stuff, you know, maybe for sixth graders or fifth graders, I guess. And I would choose to learn math just by myself, you know, maybe with a personal teacher, tutor, which I did have at some point, but, you know, that ended because of COVID.
I hear you, Jason. COVID has definitely presented some new challenges for all of us. Aside from your schoolwork, What else do you think would be helpful for your teachers or parents to know about you that might be different than your classmates?
I kind of like having one-on-one teachers because it motivates me more. Also, there's no distractions, as in, like, maybe other students misbehaving or something. And, you know, I just like harder stuff, you know, to challenge me. I think that's really helpful because I'm pretty bored in normal school. Something that also kind of frustrates me sometimes is when I do repetitive work. Like, say, I learned something yesterday, but then we're doing it all over again today. And it kind of annoys me because I already know how to do it, so I don't know why I have to do it again.
Sari, what led to the identification of each of your children, and what changes were put in place by their schools?
At the new private school, even though the principal was aware of their IQ scores and kind of some of the needs that they had, considering that they were now identified as gifted, no real changes were put in place. And we found that consistent over the next three private schools that we had attended. While some of the administrators said that they could try to accommodate, the truth is that they really didn't, and they just kept them on track with the rest of the school. So it really wasn't until I was able to accelerate them a grade that I felt that they were finally challenged and some of their academic and social emotional needs were met.
As college students, what is most life-giving to you right now?
I was lucky enough to have a really like good large friend group since basically I came to college, and now I couldn't really imagine my college experience without them. And also staying involved with my community because, you know, when you're with like other people who are also like, you know, your intellectual peers, it really makes like a difference being able to like, you know, just like be in a community with them.
As you describe, Noelle, like-minded peers and mentors make all the difference. Thank you for validating that for us. When you have time to sit quietly, what do you wonder about?
I actually refer to my novel as my journal that's not about me. When I write, it's like helps me like, yeah, like a journal, like writing out like feelings and experiences that maybe, you know, I didn't get to process as like a kid, but now that like I have the time and like vocabulary to, you know, kind of write them out, I just do that through my novel.
One thing is that even though theater is my passion and it's what I want to do for the rest of my life, I believe it's inherently selfish, because I mean, Broadway performs for a bunch of rich people who are wealthy enough to watch their shows. And so who are we benefiting outside of ourselves? So I think about ways to reconcile theater, to use it for something like greater than just itself. The second thing I think about is like expectations on men and women. And something I thought about recently was how like telling a guy to man up is sexist. Because if being a man is facing your problems head on, then what is like being a woman, right? It really should be that people should face their problems head on, and that notion should not be gendered.
I think about when were things made? You know, maybe when a candle was made or when chess was made. Who made them? You know, maybe who invented the lamp or who invented the fan? I also like to think about things that I could make. Maybe a magnet floating car.
A magnet floating car. So creative, Jason. I would love to see that someday. Luke, what influences your creativity?
One thing that fuels my creativity is just like past experiences. There are some things that even though I tried, you know, getting it out just by talking to other people, I find that it's much more healing to do it through art. And so I find that processing it through like some things like dance or music has gone a lot better for me. The second thing that I get creativity from is just watching other people do what I want to do. So since I do theater and I like dance, I watch a lot of dance videos, and I also watch a lot of videos of other people also doing theater, and that helps stir up creativity in me.
Thinking back to Luke, Noelle, and Jason's first year, what behaviors or developmental milestones did you notice as being different than other babies?
I noticed that their attention spans were just really long. But I just remember thinking, man, he can sit for a really long time and he just watches everything going on around him. He didn't really move a lot. He crawled really late, probably 9-10 months, and he didn't walk until he was 17 months. So it's because he was sitting and observing his surroundings, and he just like took everything in. And same thing with Noelle. She could sit for a really long time and just people watch. And it was almost as if she was studying them. And with Jason, I remember at 6 or 7 weeks, when people were talking, he would like babble back to them and was trying to hold a conversation. And he was definitely like a verbal processor at just even a few weeks old. And now at 10 years old now, he still is that way. So it was interesting because it was almost as if he was giving a narration of his day as he was doing things. He was just constantly talking and mumbling and babbling when he was a young baby.
Sari, thank you for sharing with us. You mentioned the long attention span, alluding to heightened sensitivity, intensity, and awareness in your children since infancy. What about throughout their childhood? Can you give us some more examples of greater than typical sensitivity, intensity, or awareness that you observed in your children? How did that affect the dynamics of each of you and your family as a whole?
For Luke, we noticed that he was coughing a lot, and the pediatrician had given him different medications and even antibiotics to try to control the coughing, and nothing helped. And after about 6 months of not being able to figure out how to help him, she just sat with him and talked to him and tried to observe. And she's kind of an out-of-the-box thinker, which I really appreciate. And she said, you know, I really think that his coughing is a tick. And so she recommended a weighted snake or a weighted vest. I think we did go with a snake. And it was amazing how just a few days of having that weighted item on him, his coughing started to disappear. So that was one of the first things that we noticed, just having a nervous habit of that tick. With Luke, he also was very curious about deeper things. He wanted to know the meaning of life, what was his purpose in life, and really deep spiritual questions, probably starting at the age of 4. And so that kind of caught us off guard. We knew at that time that maybe his thinking was a little bit deeper than some of his peers. Him and his siblings, they talk so fast when they're together. Most people cannot understand what they're saying. So they do talk pretty fast, and the three of them understand each other, and it's almost like they're in their own little world. But they do talk faster than normal. Another thing we noticed was just his sensitivity to the tags on t-shirts. And so he always complained that it would hurt him, or it was slicing him, or the tag was attacking him. And so we had to start cutting off all the tags on his shirts and making sure that there wasn't any like loose threads in his clothes, because that would really bother him. And I think one of the biggest noticeable ones is his emotional sensitivity to others. We had visited a third world country, and he had seen so much poverty around him just from the drive from the airport to the hotel. And he wept probably for 3 days. He just could not understand why there was so much poverty. and why people weren't doing anything to help them. And he wanted to help them. I think he was 9 or 10 years old at that time. So a lot of sensitivity. It was very overwhelming for us as parents, just trying to figure out how can we help him. And he just looked miserable because each of those sensitivities were so intense. And I'm just so thankful for our psychologist that we were working with, and she helped to normalize some of the behaviors and his reactions, and really taught us how to stay calm and how to stay present with him, that we didn't need to fix it and we didn't need to fix him, but he just needed a really big container. And she didn't use those words exactly, but she taught us how to contain him and to walk alongside of him and just be present with him and try not to get too overwhelmed by it all. My daughter, one of her big things is her imagination. And she just loves to write stories and create different worlds. One of the things we noticed when she was about 3 or 4 is she would comment on color combinations everywhere we would go. She would criticize posters, different outfits that people would wear. She would critique fonts, that they would be so inappropriate for the message they were trying to convey. And so she would always mention colors and how color combinations would evoke deep feelings. And so at 4 years old, I signed her up for an art class at a local college, art institute, actually, and to help her channel some of this just desire to want to create wonderful color combinations. And of course, today, she's an art major now at University of Washington. So yeah, one of her big things is imagination and also texture regarding taste. So she will normally choose foods based on how they feel in her mouth and less so about how they taste. And so texture is really important to her. And also tactile things. She'll choose clothes or blankets or stuffed animals purely based on how they feel, probably more so than how they look. So, and of course, she has an intense mind as well. She thinks deeply. She likes to explore more deeply into topics, and she doesn't mind spending hours and hours researching and studying something that she's really interested in doing. I think one of the hardest things for all three kids has been the emotional aspect, trying to help them learn how to process the emotions, how to sit with them, because they are quite intense. And for us as parents, just learning how to not react and freak out every time they have big emotions, just knowing that, you know, it'll subside eventually and it's just part of how they're designed. For Jason, I would say his is definitely physical. He loves to push his body pretty hard. So he's an avid rock climber, and a lot of times he has to hike 4 to 5 miles just to get to a crag, and he loves to rock climb, and he could spend hours doing that. He's my more physical child, and it's as if his body doesn't get tired. And it does seem more, he has more energy than most kids his age. He can go for a pretty long time. I think his is definitely psychomotor, and he loves to talk. He's a talker, and he's a verbal processor, and he's just full of life. And it seems as though his intensity is just his love for life and to enjoy anything that he's doing. So, yeah, I think, how did it affect our family? One of the things was really building the awareness in us as parents. So I'm just forever grateful for our psychologist who taught us what are the markers of profoundly gifted children, and that we didn't need to fix the kids, and that there was going to be deep feelings of happiness and also deep feelings of sadness. And actually, the older two were diagnosed as being clinically depressed as early as the age of 5 and 7. And that really just helped us know how to approach situations when they would come up, and also to help us not feel like we were somehow failing as parents, but we had tools that the psychologist gave us to just contain them, to sit with them, and really not freak out when we would see these intense emotions. And also to communicate to the kids that, you know, they were created differently maybe than some of their peers, and it's okay. It's okay that they have these deep feelings. It's okay that their shirt was bothering them when other kids didn't have to cut off their tags. It's okay that they wanted to make imaginary worlds in their mind and other kids didn't. And so I think just helping the kids to understand that they are unique individuals and that we were going to, you know, get through any of the difficult things together as a family. Another thing that was really helpful that we learned was how to name what they were feeling, and that there were lots of different words to name how they were feeling, and just building an emotional vocabulary. We received a worksheet that probably had 200 different feeling words, and just teaching the kids vocabulary on how to express their feelings, I would say that was pretty helpful. So if they looked upset or angry, you know, we would try to ask them, do you feel frustrated? Are you sad? Are you hungry? Just giving them words so that naming it and expressing it really helped to dissipate the intensity of what they were feeling.
Sari, thank you for sharing your family's journey with us. You beautifully described the heart of profound giftedness, greater than typical social, emotional, physical, cognitive, and altruistic sensitivity, intensity, and awareness, also known as overexcitabilities. Luke, Noel, and Jason, thank you for sharing yourselves with all of us. To our listeners, thank you for joining us towards better understanding, identification, and support. Please continue to reach out. We're listening. Room with a View is produced by the International Gifted Consortium Education Outreach Initiative, for you and by you. Join us on social media, giftedconsortium.org, or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, enjoy the view.